15. The rest of our flight met us at our ships. T-Stall was still munching on a handful of fried algae strips from the mess hall, and Catnip was zipping up his jumpsuit, but Kimmelin and Sadie were already climbing into their cockpits. "What's happening?" Arturo asked, meeting us by Jorgen's ship. "It's just us this time?"
"We're going to rescue a defecting superiority minister," Jorgen said. "Just our flight, but we need to hurry. Minister Kuna is already under attack. I've got coordinates to hyperjump there, but we're still figuring out how we're going to get back."
Arturo looked alarmed at that news.
"Those are our orders?" "Those are our orders," Jorgen said. "Let's get everyone in the air."
Arturo nodded and headed for his ship, yelling at Ned on the way to do the same. Rig ran up with a box full of slugs, which he thrust into my arms. Gil was in there, along with Happy, Chubbs, Drape, and Twist.
"Cobb wants us to keep the holo projector attached to the communicator," he said. "That way we'll be able to communicate with you when you get there, because we'll have one and Kuna has one."
"You might not be able to scare Fine again," I said. "You'll have to try another purple slug. Though we received more than one communication from Kuna out of the same one, so maybe the connection lasts for a while after it's established."
"I'll check on that as soon as you leave."
Rig bit his lip, looking like he wanted to say something but thought better of it. "I'll help you load the slugs into Jorgen's ship," I said, looking down at the slugs. There was another purple slug in there, and I thought it had gotten mixed in, but when we reached Jorgen's cockpit, Rig put him in the metal box beneath the dash with the others.
"I think you should take a communication slug with you," he said. "I don't know for sure how many Tanics Kuna will have. Technically, Jorgen can communicate cytonically without a slug at all, but I think you should have every resource we can spare with you, in case..."
His voice broke, and he took a deep breath. I got it. I was going, and he was staying, and he was scared. Probably for all of us. But I liked to think that he was sparing a little extra for me. "I'll come back," I said. "Perfect record of not dying, remember?"
"Yeah," Rig said. "I remember."
I wanted to take his hand, but Jorgen was already climbing into his cockpit.
"Time to go." "We haven't had time to set the ships up with interlocking pieces," Rig said to Jorgen. "So you're going to have to do it the way you did last time, all touching wings."
"Got it,"
Jorgen said. "We'll make it work. FM, let's go."
Rig reached out and squeezed me on the arm, and then hurried away. I ran for my ship and climbed in, immediately engaging my acclivity ring. My ship rose toward the ceiling of platforms between the sections of crackling blue energy holding the shield together at the seams. I looked down and saw Rig standing at the edge of the landing platform, watching us go. "I'll be back," I thought at him. Saying it wouldn't make it more or less true, though. It wasn't a promise any of us could make. Maybe I shouldn't have started anything between us, put him in a position to hurt even more if the worst happened. Or maybe I was making too much of it. Maybe none of us mattered, not really. What did it change when any of us were gone? The DDF still churned out more cadets? If they ran out, they'd lower the age to take the pilot's test and bring them in younger and younger. We'd keep sending groups out on missions like this, never knowing if they'd come back, because our survival as a group mattered more than the individuals. I didn't disagree with that. I saw the logic to it. But I still wondered, if we didn't matter as individuals, then what were we saving the group for? I joined the rest of the flight less than half a kilometer from the platform. Through a gap between platforms, I could see the crackling net of the shield. As frightened as I'd been of the stars, feeling like I could fall off the face of the world, I missed them, now that they were gone. I supposed I'd be seeing them again soon enough.
"Skyward flight," Jorgen said. "Move in together. All ships need to be touching, or some of you will be left behind."
I maneuvered my ship between Sadie's and Kimmelin's with a gentle touch. The metal of our wings rubbed against each other, and I could see Sadie looking over at me through her canopy. I tried to give her a reassuring smile. I remembered what Rig said.
You seem like you always have it together. I wanted to seem that way, I realized. Spensa lost her temper. Jorgen got frustrated. Rig could talk about fear like it was his best friend. And me? There was safety in being the one everyone else looked to. I felt everything, but I didn't want anyone to know it.
All right, Jorgen said. That looks good. Initiating hyperdrive.
I closed my eyes. We were about to hyperjump many, many times farther than we ever had. I wondered if it would take longer. I wondered if...
Stars!
T-Stall said over the radio. Are you guys seeing this?
Yes,
Jorgen said.
I think that's our destination.
I opened my eyes, staring out through the glass of my canopy at the expanse of black in front of me. The light of the nearest star was behind us, illuminating an object in the distance, a large rock that was dominated by dozens of white tentacles protruding from it, like petals on some wild flower. Or, well, it was impossible to tell by sight how large or distant it was. I'd never seen anything I could compare this thing to. I widened the scope of my proximity monitors, trying to get a sense of it.
We're 150 clicks out, Arturo said, beating me to it.
That thing! That's where we're going?
I'm getting a communication, Jorgen said. Hang on.
We hung on. Our ships had drifted a little since we'd jumped, so we were no longer bumping into each other, but none of us had engaged our boosters to move far. My radio made a little flickering noise, and I reached out to adjust the dial. This wasn't the time for the thing to fritz out. And then Kuna's smooth alien voice came over the radio. Skyward flight, the alien said. Thank you for coming to our aid. Your leader has given me permission to address you. As you can see, my crew and I are stranded on the old superiority outpost of Sunreach, an abandoned research facility built here to study this rare species of mammoth starpod. You'll want to avoid it. It's nearing its molting cycle, which makes it especially hungry.
It's hungry? Catnip said. Jerkface, what does she mean it's hungry?
I understand you humans have not often encountered other species, Kuna's voice continued. My species is referred to as they, because we do not conform to human genders. Dione's are...
Jorgen, Ned said. What is the alien going on about?
They're saying don't call them she, I said. But maybe we could deal with the formal introductions when we get there?
Right, Jorgen said. Thank you for the etiquette lesson. My team will do our best to learn what language you prefer. For now, can you tell us how to reach you? Are you saying that giant star flower thing is going to eat us?
Yes, the mammoth star pod. It generally prefers minerals and other space matter, but the feeler tubes on its limbs can't distinguish the metal in your ships from more nutritious varieties. So you might get past its mandibles before it realizes it has captured you in error. I recommend avoiding the limbs entirely by flying around the backside of the... Oh, that's unfortunate. Beyond the mammoth starpod, several objects soared toward us. Ships, from the look of them on the monitor. Probably the ones waiting for backup from the superiority. Except they must have noticed us, because they weren't waiting anymore. Please, Kuna said. Hurry!
Skyward flight, Jorgen said. We're going to fly around the side of this rock that doesn't want to eat us. Anyone not clear on which side that is?
The one without the pretty space monster, Kimmelin said. Got it.
Right, Jorgen said. Avoid the enemy ships. But if one shoots at you, shoot it back.
Always solid advice, I said. Formation?
Double V, Jorgen said. Orient so the giant space monster is on top of the giant space rock.
Without a planet nearby to orient which way was down, I suppose it made sense to agree on it in advance.
Why on the top? Ned asked. Couldn't the tentacled monster of death be on the bottom?
Because flowers grow up, Sadie said. Even giant death flowers. Everyone knows that.
She's got you there, Netter, Arturo said. Less chatter, Jorgen said. Let's keep an eye on what we're flying into.
We quieted down and fanned out, rotating so that the star pod bloomed upward into the dark sky, then accelerated toward Sunreach in wingmate pairs, Arturo and Ned taking point on one side, with Sadie and I on the other. With my proximity monitors still zoomed out, I could see 10 enemy ships closing in on a location near the center of the underside of the rock. Another 10 ships were closing in on us now. They outnumbered us, but we were used to it.
FM and Sentry, Jorgen said. Draw off as many as you can. T-Stall and Catnip, back them up. The rest of us will try to punch through to the other group of ships. Divide and conquer.
Dividing the team into two groups also weakened us, but it seemed like a good choice, all things considered. If we spent too much time on the intercepting force, the remaining ships had more time to kill or capture Kuna.
Understood, I said,
and Sadie and I sped toward the incoming ships. When we drew closer, we pivoted our boosters to slow down to dogfighting speeds. Sadie would follow my lead, which meant the specific shape of this maneuver was up to me. The smarter thing to do would be for these ships to refuse the bait and keep a perimeter to prevent us from getting close to the base where Kuna and their team was sheltered. I had to make it look like I was trying to punch past them instead of trying to distract them from their mission and hope they saw me as enough of a threat that it worked.
Cover me, I said to Sadie.
I've got you, Sadie replied. I kicked into a complicated sequence of evasive maneuvers, the kind that would have made Rig turn green. I slipped past the enemy ships through a shower of destructor fire. Several pivoted, their lines of orange fire following me. I took a hit, but it glanced off my shield. I sped toward Kuna's location, gathering tails as I went.
Nice going, FM, Jorgen said. We've got you covered, Catnip added.
Now it was time to fake panic. I let my evasive maneuvers grow wider and sloppier. Not so much that I gave the enemy too wide of a target, but enough that they might interpret it as I was losing control. Then I reversed my boosters, feeling the sharp drag as the G-forces overwhelmed the grav caps. I switched direction, shooting back toward the enemy ships in a way that was impossible to do in atmosphere, but worked beautifully in a vacuum. I roped one with my light lance and used my own momentum to execute a turn, then flew off to the side, letting the ship go once I was past. It worked. Half of the ships followed me as I shot off toward the side. T-Stall and Catnip joined Sadie in firing on the ships from behind, adding to the adrenaline of the chase. The enemy ships raced after me, destructor fire surrounding me, weakening my shield. I sped up. I wouldn't be able to outrun them, but they'd become less accurate at high speeds. And out here, we had all the space in the world.
Well done, Jorgen said. Moving in toward the base now. Amphi and Netter, take point. Quark and I will cover you.
They're on to us, T-Stall said. Peeling away and coming your direction, jerk.
It was true. Two of the ships were still hot on my tail, but the other three were making a wide loop and heading back to chase down the rest of the flight.
Sentry and I can handle this if you want to follow, I said to T-Stall and Catnip.
They both readily agreed, circling around to go after the returning ships. I continued my evasive maneuvers, trying to hold the interest of my two tails. I couldn't keep it up forever, though.
Ready to take care of these guys? I asked Sadie.
Ready and willing, Sadie replied.
You take the one on my left wing, I said. I'll take the one on the right.
You got it, Sadie said. And I abruptly cut speed, slowing myself with a reverse of my boosters. The enemy ships shot past me, and I engaged my IMP, dropping their shields. Both Sadie and I opened fire, ripping the enemy ships apart against the dark sky.
Good work, I said to Sadie. Let's help the others.
We paused while I reignited my shield, and then we reversed course, now far enough out that I couldn't get a visual of the others against the dark expanse. I listened as the others exchanged orders over the radio, engaging with the enemy ships.
Jerkface, they're headed for you. I've got them. Cover me. Jerkface, I've got a clear shot. Can you bring down their shields? On it.
Sadie and I accelerated as I found the others on my monitor. It was scudding hard to take down a Krell fighter without bringing down their shields first, but these ships were too good. All enemy aces, not the less skilled drone pilots we'd been fighting. Our team needed backup.
Jerkface, you've got 3 ships on your tail, Arturo said. Don't bring down your shields.
I see them, Jorgen said. I'll jump out right after. Engaging IMP. Sadie and I soared closer, and I finally spotted Jorgen's ship against the backdrop of space, just as his shield went down. Half a second later, he disappeared. I immediately zoomed out my proximity monitors, searching for his ship. Jorgen reappeared on the other side of the rock, up near the mammoth star pod and its dangerous tentacles.
Jerkface, what are you doing? I said over the radio.
I overshot, Jorgen said. I think the slug misunderstood me.
Get out of there, I said.
I'm on it, he said. I'm going to go evasive and try to fly out. If that fails, I'll engage the hyperdrive again.
On the monitor, the arms of the starpod moved slowly, like they were swaying in a breeze.
Guys, Ned said, what is the enemy doing?
I watched on my monitors as several of the ships near Kuna's base and all of the ones we'd been dogfighting sped out around the edge of the rock and upward toward the tentacles of the starpod. They knew more about this creature than we did. If they thought they could survive flying through the tentacles, they probably could. But Jorgen couldn't take all those ships, not by himself.
Humans, Kuna said over the radio. Our analysis of the enemy flight patterns suggests that their primary focus is now to kill your cytonic.
You don't say, Ned said.
Jerkface, Arturo said. They're coming for you. Get out of there.
Engaging hyperdrive,
Jorgen said. We're on our way, I said, accelerating to follow the other ships up and over the rock.
Scud.
The starpod was enormous. This rock was far smaller than a planet, much closer to the size of one of the larger platforms around Detritus. But the arms of the starpod reached many times farther than the circumference of the rock, each tentacle many wingspans wide and several kilometers long. They were whitish in color, with smaller, purplish stalks growing up the middle of each arm, giving the illusion of a purple racing stripe. If the starpod was using those feelers to catch debris out of the space around it, it could almost certainly grab and hold a starship. As if attracted to my motion, one of the arms began to lean slowly in my direction, and I rolled my ship out of the way to avoid it. Up ahead, I could see Jorgen's ship near the center of the creature. The enemy ships raced toward him, opening fire as the tentacles of the starpod slowly swayed in their direction.
Engaging hyperdrive, Jorgen said.
His ship blinked out, and back again, this time closer to the body of the starpod.
Scud, the slugs aren't listening to me, Jorgen said. I think they're trying to get into a smaller space.
I steered my ship up to get a better view, and stared into the scudding maw of the creature. Rows and rows of long ivory protrusions jutted from its center like teeth, but these were clearly flexible, waving about like the much longer tentacles.
Tongues.
This creature had 1,000 tongues arranged in circles around its pink, cavernous mouth. And at this moment, all of them were reaching for Jorgen's ship. The enemy ships continued to move toward him, and I followed, Sadie at my wing. Jorgen pulled up, clearing the tongues, then evaded a tentacle that undulated down, looping toward him. The enemy reached him, destructor fire raining everywhere.
Get out of there, I said to Jorgen.
Engaging,
Jorgen said. His shield cracked.
Hyper!
His ship jerked to the side, like he was trying to avoid the fire for one more moment to give himself enough time to frighten one of the slugs. One final movement, and then his shield broke.
Scud,
Jorgen said over the radio. And then his ship ripped apart, torn to bits by enemy fire. The pieces floating backward as the creature licked toward them eagerly with its tongues.